Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisor Podcast. This is Toby Mathis. Today I have a great guest with a group that I've actually been down and spoken to. It's a really exceptional group as far as experience, but Ken Harris, who is down there with Austin Apartment Buyers, and fantastic guy. Welcome, Ken.
Great to be here. Glad to join you.
Just as a precursor, before we get into kind of what you do and your group and everything else, is just kind of a background. Did you grow up in Texas? Is this your home? And you've always lived there? Or did you start someplace else?
I was born and raised Texas, third generation, in Houston. Went to school at the University of North Texas, which is north of Dallas, and studied economics and finance. Thought at that time, maybe I wanted to be a banker or a stockbroker. Then I went to the military. I was in Vietnam for a year, but after 4 years in the Air Force, I knew that I wanted to come back to Austin, Texas, not Houston. I've said before, I've offended some people, but I've said that nobody really lives in Houston because they want to. They just live there because that's where their jobs are. And as a youngster,
you're gonna make a few friends here.
We vacationed in the Texas Hill Country, and Austin is sort of the gateway to that. And so I made my home here. The problem was at that time, we're talking about 1971, Austin wasn't so big. Most of the jobs were state jobs or state agencies. I didn't really want to do that. And the other jobs offered to me were corporations where I'd have to, might be transferred in a year or two. So that's how I ended up in real estate. And if I'd known then what I know now, I would have never done residential real estate. But I didn't know any better.
Really? So you would have stayed away from residential?
I would have absolutely started directly with commercial. I know people who do that these days, and that's what I would have started with. I was in the business listing and selling houses. I had a franchise office, about 16 salespeople. Did that for about 6 years, but I decided to make the change and sold that office out. And in the late 70s, got into the commercial business, mostly doing site acquisition for users. Mr. Gaddy's, which is a local chain, pizza chain in this part of the country, 7-Eleven, folks like that. Yeah, and did a lot of site acquisition work like that in that business. Then ended up in the business with a partner. We started doing little shopping centers and office buildings. We got the car wash business. We had about 6 self-service car washes. But that gets into the mid-80s. And young people don't know what happened in Texas in the mid-80s. Economic crisis, a total collapse. Basically, I've said before, the state closed. The state just went out of business. It's a little bit of ridiculous, but we had hundreds and hundreds of see-through buildings, big office towers all over the state. Not a tenant won anywhere. The banks in Texas up until that time in Texas, there was no branch banking. Every bank was an individual bank. You banked Capital National Bank, you banked at that bank. There were no ATMs, there were no branches. Mm-hmm. And the banks ended up going out of business. All but a few of Texas banks ended up in bankruptcy. Lenders who had come to us and said, hey, we want to loan you money, a year later were saying, you have to pay back that loan and we can't honor the terms we said we were going to give you because we don't have the money. The richest people in Texas filed bankruptcy all over the state. The former governor of Texas, John Connally, who was actually in the car with Kennedy when Kennedy was killed, Connally was wounded. Ultimately, he was an attorney, but he ultimately got in the real estate development business and he filed bankruptcy. I remember his governor's chair being auctioned off. And in Austin, the Nashville Scopus was the name of a home building company. And in 1985, they were the home builders of the year for the entire country, National Home Builder Magazine. And it was in 86 or 87, they filed bankruptcy. They went out of business.
That was quick.
So that happened across the state. And as a result, my partner and I ended up with a lot of debt and a lot of real estate. But it was small compared to the big time folks. And it took us about 4 or 5 years to negotiate our way out of all of that. During that time, I really wasn't in the real estate business making a living, owned a lot of real estate and had a lot of responsibility for it. And then in 1990, a friend of mine who'd been in the construction business came to me and he said, hey, he was making a living building cellular telephone tower sites, cell tower sites. And he said, the problem was, he needs somebody to help out with the real estate, for finding locations, you know, could run down property owners, find out who they were, where they were, go negotiate a deal for a tower. Mm-hmm. And I started doing that in 1990, thinking it was going to be like maybe a 2-week project. And it turned into a 25-year career. And that's what I did pretty much full time for quite a while. And the first few years was learning my way. But then after that, got into it seriously. And had some very, very good years. A lot of good stuff in.
So you would go to the property owner and you'd say, hey, we want to put a cell tower on, or would you negotiate it? And
what happened is that the people, whoever was looking for a location, and we say tower or antennas, could be on an existing tower, could be on a water tower, could be on the top of a office building, something like that. But somebody had to figure out how to locate the property owners. The engineers, they worked at their computers. The radio frequency engineers worked at their computers and figured out, okay, this is where we need something. Mm-hmm. And they would give that to me, and it was my job to turn that information into reality and find out what the possibilities were, get the engineers' approval on the best possibilities, and put it together. The tower companies, whether it's an individual tower company or a cell tower company, they lease the locations. Mm-hmm. And I worked for the tower companies. I was getting paid by them on a fee basis. And we did a lot of those deals. I did over 1,000 of those deals over the 25 years that I was in the business. Wow. Mostly in Texas.
So you would go and you would just go to these multi-year leases on somebody. How long were the leases typically?
That's right. Most of them are 25 to 30 year leases.
Yeah.
Most of them. Yeah. So that's what we did during that time. Most of the real estate investing I did was almost by accident. That is real estate that I owned, you know, residences that I lived in. And so I'd keep it as a rent house and buy something else. And then after a few years, I did some 1031 exchanges, rent houses for duplexes. And I did that. Somebody asked me one time my secret to success. And I said, I was living a long time. Because owning some of those places 25 years or so, well, it built up some pretty good equity.
Yep.
And so that's what I did until about 2014. And along in there, by that time, the cellular tower business had consolidated a lot. And for about 15 years, I had one customer, Verizon Wireless, and good folks, but it just became more and more difficult for it to be both profitable and fun. And so I decided that I was going to make a change. And that's when I began to take a look at what we know more about real estate investing. And I looked at the fix and flip business and decided that was hard work and I didn't want to work that hard anymore. But about that same time, I also learned about getting into apartment syndication. And the more I learned about that, the more I decided I wanted to be a passive investor there. And that's what I decided to do. Over a few year period of time, that's exactly what I've done. It's just basically converted my equities to being a passive investor in apartment syndications. And I'm in about 2,200 units, about 12 different entities, 15 properties, and 10 different cities, almost none in Austin, Texas. They're mostly around other places. And then a couple of those are out of state, one in Albuquerque and one in Lawrence, Kansas.
So wow. And so you, after all these years, it sounds like you did residential, you did a lot of commercial, you did their cell, and then you kind of settle on, hey, I'm going to invest in syndications of people that actually buy the apartments. And so you don't manage the syndications, I take it.
I don't. I looked seriously at that possibility of being a deal sponsor. And for me at this place in my life, I don't want that much responsibility. It's hard work, but the hard work part doesn't bother me. But it's a lot of responsibility to investors. And sometimes it can take, you know, 5, 6, 7 years or so. Well, 7 years from now, I don't want to have that kind of responsibility. Yeah. Me personally, I know guys my age that are still doing those things, and that's what they want to do. I choose not to. I want to go hiking, biking, camping, kayaking. That's what I want to do.
Yep. And so you built your you built your portfolio around your lifestyle.
That's correct.
I want to sit back and just get the checks.
Absolutely.
How do you pick your syndications then? That's a big one, because there's a lot of folks out there that want to put money in real estate and they're scared to death, or they get ripped off, or they're worried that they're going to, their money's going to be locked up. How do you pick yours?
I focus on who's running it, who the jockey is. Some people like to look more at the horse. I look more at the jockey. I want to know who's doing it and be comfortable with those people, that they're going to be in a position to take care of what needs to be done. I've been fairly lucky in my decisions. I don't do a terribly good job of analysis. Yeah, I look at the basics, which is available to most folks. But those are numbers that are provided by that deal sponsor, more or less. You can see how legitimate the numbers are. But it's hard to really analyze them completely. And so I just try to make a determination, are these folks the folks that I think are going to do well? And I've been fortunate. But I do a lot of that, of paying close attention to who's sponsoring the deal and how I feel about it. Now, truthfully, I've done a few of those that were just kind of, I don't know, but let's just see. And they've turned out very well.
So, and it's because do you have a relationship with the people that you invest
with? That's correct. Correct. There's not anybody that I've invested with. There are folks that I just don't know anything about at all. I have some idea.
Are you looking to lower your taxes, protect your assets, and grow your wealth? Are you a real estate investor, stock trader, or business owner? If you answered yes, Anderson Advisors Tax and Asset Protection Workshop is for you. Let host Clint Coons, Toby Mathis, and Michael Bowman teach you how to protect and keep more of what you earn. Our workshops are held monthly throughout the country and via live stream. 2 in-person tickets to the workshop are only $99. To learn more about the dates and locations, visit AndersonAP.com and register today.
Tell me about your group, because I've had the pleasure, just so people know, I've had the pleasure of going down and speaking to them, and it's like a really educated, smart group. I'm kind of joking. I always say, if I'm going to go down and give a talk, if I can't get through my first slide, I have a good group. If I'm going through our slides like crazy, it's because I'm not getting a lot of feedback or there's not a lot of questions. In your group, I probably didn't even get past the first slide. So I just remember very intelligent, very good people. So maybe share with us what it is, what you guys do, and how you came about.
Sure. It started because I thought I wanted to be a deal sponsor. And I knew that to be a deal sponsor on a syndicated deal, Reg D506B has to be based on personal relationship, no general solicitations. And a meetup was a good way to establish those kind of personal relationships. And that's how it got started in the first place. That was about 4 years ago. And for whatever reasons, the decision was made that it would be a weekly meeting, not once a month, not first Tuesdays, not, you know, it's every Tuesday at lunchtime. It's a lunchtime meeting. That was our logic, that you needed to be able to have the flexibility to come to a lunch meeting. And so we started on that basis. And it's just grown. It's our focus primarily is on networking. Other people want to do the same thing. Deal sponsors want to come in contact with passive investors. And the same thing, passive investors are looking for deals to get involved in. So the networking aspect, and then the education. And it's same there. Education of passive investors so they know what to look for in deals, and education of deal sponsors so they know how to make the right connections with the right people. That's generally what our focus is. Of course, when you were there, we talked about income tax or taxation, and that's important to both passive investors and deal sponsors. So the meetup is that kind of meetup. That's what it's about. One of the things that's happened, it was to be mostly a discussion group, but it's grown so much that it's hard to do that. And the demand for education trainers, people who do what you do, has grown so much. We have a speaker tomorrow. It'll be Tuesday the 7th, 2020. And our speaker tomorrow is a friend of mine. And he does national presentations. He also has a podcast as well. He's done 400 or 500 of those things. I think interviewed people.
Who is it?
The guy's name is Tom Singer. And what Tom does is go to corporate meetings, and he's an MC for corporate meetings and a lead speaker across the country. And he's tomorrow going to focus on goal setting and some of the gaps between good intentions and the and actually accomplishing goals. So those are the kind of things that we focus on, education things along those lines. And we meet every Tuesday, every Tuesday, every Tuesday. We met on Christmas Eve, and we met on New Year's Eve at lunchtime.
And how was the attendance on those?
We had about 35 or 40 people both days. Tremendous crowd.
What's the name of the meetup group?
The meetup's called, well, it was called Austin Apartment Investing Discussion Group. We've now changed the name to Austin Commercial Real Estate Investing Group, simply because some of our focus is on mobile home parks, storage facilities, self-storage, other possibilities. So main group is still on apartment investing, but you can syndicate anything. You can successfully syndicate all sorts of real estate, and we have parts of our group that are branching out to other areas. So Austin Commercial Real Estate Investing Discussion Group, and it's a meetup. Just meetup.com. Look at Austin Investing Meetup.com.
Free, and, right?
And it's no charge. We welcome everybody. I say that we are non-denominational. I use that phrase to refer to the fact many meetups are associated with a particular mentor. Mm-hmm. And we have mentors that come to our meetup. It doesn't make any difference whether you're a mentor, have one, don't have one, or who you're associated with. It's for everybody that's interested in commercial real estate investing, whether as a deal sponsor or a passive investor. And we also, we really like newbies, people who are just getting started out. And they don't know exactly what they want to learn about and where to ask questions. What I have told people is, you come to my meetup every Tuesday for 3 months, and you'll know all of the questions and most of the answers. You'll get it, because you can't help it if you're in there. Mm-hmm. And you get presentations by people like you and many others, and sit at a table with a guy who owns, you know, several thousand apartments. Mm-hmm. You're going to catch on. You're going to figure things out. So it's for everybody.
It's always interesting, because I get these people and they always say, hey, where do I learn? Where do I learn? And, you know, in our world, a lot of people are going through the companies, the workshops, they're doing this. And I always say, you know, I've probably learned more just from meeting people that actually did it.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing against a workshop or a seminar. They're absolutely wonderful if you invest yourself and but the whole trick is to go there to meet people that are doing what you're doing. And, you know, if you have a meetup, that's even better. You just, you can hop in and you're meeting people that are doing what you're doing, which is great.
We have been blessed with some fairly heavy hitters that come to our meetup on a regular basis, and they're great about sharing their experiences with other people.
Isn't that interesting? I've always been shocked. I always tell people, like, the rich folks tend to, or the successful people tend to like to pay it forward. They like to share.
Right.
Yeah, usually you should listen when they talk, because they're talking from experience. That's fantastic. How long have you had that group now? It's about 4 years?
About 4 years, yeah, about 4 years. And it has began to grow a lot. We were happy if we had 20 people show up, and now it's usually from 40 to 70 people every Tuesday.
I remember when I was there, it was packed. Absolutely. Yeah, that was great. They had them at a restaurant. I forget, what was the name of the restaurant that we met at?
Yeah, our meeting has been successful in spite of me.
What was the, we met at a really cool restaurant, and you knew the owner. What was the name of the restaurant?
Casa Chapala, it's a Mexican restaurant. People have a choice of ordering from menu, or they have a real nice buffet. So yeah, it's in the north central Austin, pretty easy to get to. Folks can get there on a regular basis. We have visitors that come from all over the state. So we have lots of folks show up here. It's a good meeting and a lot of fun.
Fantastic group. Again, I can just tell you because I get to meet the people, very knowledgeable. And I always look for people that are the BS artists that are out there talking that haven't done it. And everybody there mm-hmm. seemed pretty straightforward. And the guys that were new were very clear about, hey, I haven't done this. Yeah. I'm trying to figure out where to deploy funds.
We had a pretty good showing at your the 3-day event that was in.
Oh Austin. Yeah. I wasn't able to get down there, but
you weren't there. You were in South America, I think, at that time. But yeah. we had a pretty good showing from our crowd that was there.
Yeah. I hope that they got something out of it. They probably had Carl and maybe Clint or Michael.
Oh yeah, I enjoyed it. I it was my second time to go, which is it's a great event. And you bet I enjoyed it. And we had a good crowd from our meetup that was there.
Yeah, no, it's great people. So I can always say, hey, recommended if you can and get to Austin, go hang out with them. On a personal note, in your investing, what are your biggest wins that you've had over the years, if you're willing to share?
Sure.
Because you know it's going to come after the biggest wins, right?
Yeah. I've been fortunate, but I would say really what's worked the best is holding on to the real estate for a long period of time. Yes, we had some big wins in the 80s. We did. That was great. But then the crash came and it all went away. And since the mid 90s, for the most part, the economy's been pretty good. And so if holding on through real estate, even though it stabilizes, it doesn't really go down very much. In the 80s, yes, that bad time it did. But other than that, most of the time, maybe it doesn't go up quite as much. And I would say that just the properties that I've held on to and then subsequently sold, those were some good things. But also, I will share with you that I went in as a passive investor. I also participated to a certain small degree, and the deal sponsor, it was his first deal, and he's a very hard worker, and I had faith, and I decided, okay, I'm going to go in on this deal. We were only in it for about 14 months, and we had better than a 40% IRR on that deal. He went in there, did what needed to be done. And after a year's time, I said, let's put it on the market, and it did, and it did very, very well. I've actually had two deals that I've gone full circle on in the last couple of years, and they've done better than 30% internal rate of return. And so those deals have done well.
And, that's fantastic. Yeah. That's really good. Now, what about the losses? You've probably had some deals where you're like, you wish you had a do-over.
Sure. And of course, those refer to a lot to the 80s. I will say that I also was a lender on some deals mm-hmm. with a deal sponsor that I had faith in. I thought it was going to be okay. He made some very serious mistakes, and it wasn't until it was too late that I became aware. And in one particular case, the only way I could have a chance of saving my investment was to take over the deal. And at a time when I really didn't want to be doing that, I now own what we might describe as an eightplex. It's one piece of real estate that has four duplexes on it, has a piece of dirt for a fifth duplex. And when I took it over, I assumed debt that probably exceeded its value. I still have it. I put some more money in it, made some changes. It's doing okay. If it didn't have the debt against it, it would be great, but it still has too much debt. Maybe someday I'll work my way out of that. So that's not one of my favorites for sure.
You're hitting something that I personally believe, and this isn't from, I'm not a real estate instructor or anything like that, but I do talk to a lot of young people. Mm-hmm. And I'll ask you about what you would tell young people here in a second too, but I always tell them like time tends to make you smart in real estate. The longer you hold something, the smarter you look.
Right.
It was with a lending group down there, Jet Lending, that's in Houston. If you know, you probably know Eddie Gantt.
Yeah, I know them.
Fantastic. And they had an economist from the University of Texas come in. And he talked about using the non-scientific approach of going to the multiple listing and having, you know, when you're dealing with real estate agents, you just have them go pull it up and say, go find me some places where you weren't even or above over a 10-year stretch. Even over the last recession or depression, whatever you want to call it, what happened in 2007 through 2017, it's really tough to find properties that didn't recover over that 10-year stretch. And so so his big thing was, hey, if you hold it for 10 years, you're not going to be worse. The longer you hold something, it tends to make you smarter. So I assume that you kind of agree with that. It sounds like.
Yes. There's no question. I think Warren Buffett even talks about something along those lines, that, you know, time is one of the greatest assets in real estate investing. Is if you just give it enough time, it's going to do okay in most cases.
Yeah, he always says his holding period is forever.
Yeah.
So I do that same thing. I'm like, worst case scenario, how many properties did you end up flipping, or did you jump into on those?
Did I personally?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I didn't flip very many, probably a dozen or so. Yeah.
You say not many, that's a lot for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I flipped a bunch of properties, and I always said, I wish I had them all back.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah,
I wish I had them all back. I would rather have those in my stable of properties at this point.
I personally have never heard anybody say, oh man, I am so glad I sold that property. No, nobody is very happy usually that they sold something. There was a reason, and that sold whatever you had to along the way. I've told this story before. This goes way back. I actually made my first real estate investment in 1968, before I even lived in Austin. I bought 30 acres of land outside of a ranch near Austin. And I've had people ask me, they've said, well, do you still have it? And my response has been, well, it really wouldn't made any difference. I did sell it, but it wouldn't have made any difference if I hadn't sold it, because one of my ex-wives would probably have it anyway. So there are lots of factors that come into play along the way. And yes, do I wish I still had that piece of property? Well, certainly I wish I still had it. But I'm sorry, it had to go at the time that it did. So I agree with you that nobody really wants to sell something. They usually just have to for one reason or another.
You're doing it for another reason, which is fine. I have so many investors and they flip houses, and I'm always like, oh man, they walk away with a little bit. And I'm like, that's a lot of work for that little bit. Yeah. I would have sat on it for 10 years.
Attention all real estate investors, business owners, stock traders, and anyone looking to get out of the rat race for good. We all know time is money, but did you know there's a wealth of resources on how to make more money, keep more money, and protect what you've earned, all for free online? Anderson Business Advisors YouTube channel offers free resources on asset protection and tax reduction from lawyers and CPAs, designed to help you keep more money in your pocket. To learn how to limit your liability, protect what you've earned, and minimize your tax burden all for free, subscribe to Anderson Business Advisors on YouTube today.
Hey, we'll just kind of conclude with this one. This is like, I have a feeling that this is going to be an interesting answer. So I'm just going to set you up for this. But what would you tell a 16-year-old who walked up to you and said, hey, what advice would you give me? What's the one thing that you would tell me in the world of investing?
That's pretty simple, because I experienced that with some friends. And that is, read Rich Dad Poor Dad. Get an understanding of what it's about. And I personally know some people. In fact, a good friend of mine, a woman, read Rich Dad Poor Dad when she was 16. And she set out to get herself to a place where she could accomplish that. And she did. She's 35 now. And she is retired, living off of her real estate income. And it's just because she practiced those principles. If someone may decide maybe that's not what they want to do, but at that age, having an understanding of what passive income is and how you establish it and how you can make it work, I think is critical. I really do. I know of several people who read that book at an early age, and at least they understood and began to focus in that direction. Of course, when I was 16, it hadn't been written, but I did read a book. I did read a book at that time about how I made $1 million in real estate. And it was a guy who worked for the telephone company, and he put away $50 a month, and he kept buying rent houses, and he would sell them and take his equity and move up until he owned $1 million worth of real estate. And of course, back in the 60s and 70s, that was a lot of money. And so that was the motivation for me. I understood the principle of investing in real estate way back there. I didn't quite understand the passive income portion the way I understand it today, but that's what I would recommend to a 16-year-old today. Get an understanding about how the economy works and what it takes and why investing works and what good it does, not only for you as an individual, but for the rest of the world. We as passive investors are help providing housing for lots of people who need it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a two-way street. That's what I'm saying.
That's a really good piece of advice. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Robert Kiyosaki is one of my faves. I've actually spoken with him on the same stage. Great guy. To this day, like, it still keeps it really simple. He always talks about buying houses and trading them up for hotels. So
sure.
I wish it was that easy, but makes it sound like it's something you want to do. And if you do it, everybody I've ever met that's actually followed those principles has had a lot of success from it. I've never met anybody that, which is kind of interesting.
It's great info. If you have the time, I got one quick story I'll share with you about.
Absolutely.
We had one of our members of our meetup, a local orthopedic surgeon in Austin, Texas, a guy named Tom Burns. We see him on a fairly regular basis. And Tom, about 25 years ago, somewhere in that time frame, was very interested in passive investing because he was concerned if something happened and he could be an orthopedic surgeon, he wanted to have some passive investments. And so he was interested in real estate. And he was at a car wash in Austin, Texas. The Finish Line Car Wash in Austin, Texas. He saw this little stack of books. He looked at it and he thumbed through it. And he said, wow, this is exactly what I'm interested in. And he bought that book and every copy that was there. He bought 12 copies of it because he wanted all his friends to see it as well. I love hearing Tom tell this story. He should be on your podcast sometime to tell his story. And obviously, I've heard it from him. And so Tom noticed when he looked inside the front of the book that the author's name and phone number was in there. So he called him and talked with him. And he was wanting to get more copies of the book. And he asked the author, say, how many of these copies do you have? And he said, well, I ordered 1,000 in the first printing. And Tom asked him, well, so, you know, do you have more that I can get? And he said, how many more do you have? And he said, well, how many did you buy? And Tom told him, and he said, well, I have, you're the only ones that's purchased. And it was Tom Burns who purchased the original copies of Rich Dad Poor Dad. It's now sold about 45 million copies.
And, oh my and gosh.
Tom and his wife actually went to Robert and Kim's house and played the cash flow game with them way back there. And Tom's been associated with him. And Tom has now had that book framed and presented it to Robert Kiyosaki.
Oh, wow. That
as
is
I
so
understand
cool.
it, and I don't know the exact details, but as I understand it, Rich Dad was sort of a composite of people, really, not one person. And I think the guy's name was Keith Cunningham, but I'm not certain of that. But at that time, he was living in Austin, Texas. And that's the reason those first copies were for sale in Austin, Texas. And it had originally been printed as to go along with the cash flow game. And Tom, if I remember this correctly, was one of the original people that said, hey, you need to sell this book by itself, not just as with the cash flow game. And so we're blessed that we have somebody that goes back that far with Robert Kiyosaki and the cash flow game and Rich Dad Poor Dad as part of our group in Austin, Texas. And Tom has presented to our group in the past and is supposed to present again at some point in the future.
I would like to talk to him. What's interesting when you look at this, I mean, Jiminy Christmas, that's going way back there on the Rich Dad, Poor Dad. But I still talk to people now who've never heard of it.
Yeah.
I think that book was about 2 years on the New York Times bestseller list.
That's
a business book, which is pretty interesting. And I don't know anybody who's read it who wasn't influenced greatly by it.
Sure.
I think he's a fantastic educator. You know, Anderson and ourselves, we've done the tax and legal behind Rich Dad for a lot of years, for more than 15 years. And again, we like to say that there's buy-in on this side is no, like this is the way you do it. And he makes it very simple. And the cash flow game is a great way. I think Monopoly and cash flow are two peas in a pod that they work out. And it teaches you the principle of what an asset is, what a liability is.
Absolutely.
so fantastic when you actually realize that. That is wild, though. He bought the first 12 copies
right here in Austin, Texas.
And then he talked to Robert. And Robert's such an interesting guy. He actually used to speak for DC the Dame Cordova. And it was all based off a Critical Path, a kind of philosophy. It's a philosophy book. It's so interesting to see that this gal who taught, I think it was T. Harv Eker and Anthony Robbins, Tony Robbins, and Kiyosaki, and he used to teach, and it was all on the principle of what occurs up here.
Right.
Not mindset. All this. Yep. It's so amazing. And you see that come through after the decades, and you're like, wow, that's holding up. That's fantastic. I had no idea that you had that connection. That's interesting. Yeah, cool. I'm a big believer. He's helped my family out. He helped my brother out just in reading that book. So yeah, that's a really good one. I've asked that question to a lot of people, Ken. Nobody just came out and just said, hey, read this.
That's right.
Usually they wax philosophical for a little while. Anyway, do you have a website or anything for your meetup group? Is there anything?
The truth is we don't. Just meetup.com.
Just go
Austin,
to meetup.
And commercial it's real estate investing at meetup.com. And that's it. Right.
Austin,
and all the information is there. And we love to have people come. And if they visit and they want to get on our mailing list, we send them a reminder once a week about coming to our meeting. But yeah, we like to have people join us for sure. That'd be great. And so the question is, you and Clint both are welcome to come back and see us anytime.
Would love that. And I really appreciate that. It was a fun group. I'm going to bug you to come down there and just to rub elbows with a few of those guys at some point. Cool. I may just come down and join you just for lunch. It's because I enjoyed getting to talk to everybody. Before I even talked, that was probably one of my favorite times because I'm meeting everybody and they're all kind of like, all right, you're the tax guy. It was kind of fun.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, you know, but they all had really interesting scenarios. And to me, that's like, that's what I really enjoy is the different scenarios and trying to figure things out. It's like a Rubik's Cube. It's
cool.
You're always trying to figure out the puzzle. Ken, it's just really, I really, really appreciate you spending time with us. So I just want to say thank you.
Thanks very much. I enjoyed the visit, and we look forward to seeing you in Texas.
Fantastic. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast, and if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.